is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
Europe, 1939. Europe, 1914. Lessons learned for Europe, 2022. George Friedman, the chairman and founder of Geopolitical Futures, is here to help us understand what the U.S. learned in the 20th century that is now extremely predictive of how the war in Ukraine will spill out over these next months, years. George, a very good evening to you. Thank you. In 1939, it was known as the Atlantic First Policy. The U.S. had a choice to make as it was thinking about the war in Europe and watching the depredations of the Japanese in East Asia. The understanding was, no matter if when war comes, it will come from both sides, as they were right, then the Japanese and the Germans linked up, and we will fight Europe first, and what resources we have, we'll fight Japan and the Pacific second. Your essay reminds me of that, George, and at the center of it is the Atlantic Ocean. How so, 1914, 1939, 2022? Good evening to you.
Good evening. The United States is immune to invasion from land. We have Canada to the north, Mexico in the south, and however upset the Canadians get, they're not going to invade us. The threat to the United States is always the oceans. Attacks will come from the Atlantic or the Pacific. The Japanese attempted an attack from the Pacific. The United States blocked the Germans. It blocked the Germans by forcing the British in return for a lend-lease to give us, lend-lease to us, almost all naval bases in the North Atlantic, and to promise that they would give us the British Royal Navy if they had to surrender. So for us, that's the lifeline. That's the buffer zone. You know, we talk about the Russian buffer zone. This is the American buffer zone, the ocean. And our fear is that some power in Europe will conquer all of Europe and use its incredible resources to build a competing naval fleet to take over the North Atlantic, which would put us in distance. Therefore, we always fight on the land for control of the two oceans.
From Bismarck's victory over the French in 1870-71 until the decision to attack, to join in with Serbia in 1914. Germany developed very quickly, but it had fears, I learned, George, and the fears were that Russia, the United Kingdom, and France would unite. I take the fact of that fear. Was that the trigger for the attack, for the launch of the armies in 1914?
Absolutely. The French were terrified of the Germans. They had come together, united in 1871, and by 1914, they towered over the French. The British were also frightened. The Germans were building a fleet, a substantial fleet. This was a great nation that could mobilize capabilities and so on. To the east was the Russians. They were always concerned. If France, if Russia, if Britain simultaneously attacked Germany with the initiative, Germany would crack. They couldn't take that sort of attack, so they had to preempt.
The twist here is why England declared war on Austria-Hungary. Austria-Hungary, I can understand. Geography says we support Germany, we will stand with Germany. But why did England attack Vienna?
Well, the proper answer is they're a very neat country, and they had to neaten up their list of enemies. They put them on. But more precisely, it had to do with the Balkans. The British had interests in the Balkans, not very major ones, and the Austro-Hungarians are threatening it. So they at least made it clear that there was a possibility there in Italy blocking them. But it was a throwaway. The real battle was with Germany. Germany defined Europe from 1871 onward.
A subplot here. Was there a possibility of the Tsar making a separate peace with the Kaiser early in the war?
There was some talk of it. The problem was that the Russian army was not very mobile. It couldn't come to Western Germany to protect against the Russians, against the French. At the same time, the Germans really didn't want them to come into Germany. So to the extent that there could have been a paper saying some sort of policy of United being united, they really couldn't work out a deal together. Russia was either going to stay out of the war, winding up perhaps with a Germany it couldn't cope with, or going against the Germans.
Yes, and the ironies here are so rich, George, we don't have any time, but the eventual surrender of Russia to Germany in the days of the revolution renders Ukraine a tool of the German Empire for a few years. And now we turn to the U.S. getting involved. Now we're back to how the U.S. sees the world. 1916, Wilson campaigns, too proud to fight. 1917, the revelation of unrestricted submarine warfare. Was that the trigger for us to declare war?
It was. That plus the fact that the Germans were winning the war, and that if Britain left, where it was forced out of the war, and its fleet lost or gone over to the Germans, the United States wasn't in a position at that point to hold on to the Atlantic. And it faced in the long run the possibility of a German invasion of North America. It couldn't live with that. So the Lusitania, which they sank, was kind of the trigger. But it wasn't the thinking that was going on. It went far further than that.
1939, Germany attacks Poland. The United Kingdom and France get involved in the war. But the U.S. sits it out until 1941 and the Japanese attack. Except for in that interim, the Roosevelt administration was maneuvering to support England. Why?
Well, the U.S. was not in the war, but it was heavily involved in the Atlantic. And in the Atlantic, it was making certain that the British stayed in the war by sending supplies to Britain, ships to Britain, what have you. It hoped that the British were able to hold them off, that it wasn't necessary for us to get involved on the land. But we were deeply involved in the sea. I mean, we were busy both taking from the British, as I said, but also afraid of giving to the Germans.
1948. The Berlin incident, the beginning that I can date to the Cold War with Joseph Stalin and at that time, Harry Truman. The forming of NATO, the defense of NATO from another aggressor on the continent. Was that the Atlantic concern, George?
Well, it was first of all making certain that the Soviet Union would not conquer all of Europe and have access to its resources, its technology, and so on. That frightened us because what they could do in the Atlantic. But a lot of the Cold War was fought not on land, but was maneuvered in the ocean. The Russians realized the American strategy, which was to send vast convoys of men and material to Europe. It had to break that convoy to win. And coming down out of what was called the geo-gap, Greenland, United Kingdom, Iceland, through that gap, they were sending submarines, backfire bombers, supersonic bombers, and we were beefing up our anti-submarine warfare and so on. So the interesting thing is, while everybody's eyes was on Germany and the full the gap, as it was called, there was a huge buildup in the Atlantic. They wanted us to choke on our supplies. We wanted them to be pushed back into the north, into the Arctic, basically.
So the World War III that hasn't happened yet is about the North Atlantic. The Europe First policy of the Second War was about the North Atlantic. And the First War, when we rode to the rescue, was about getting a million men to France in time to break the German offensive of 1918. Fine. Now we come to 2022. Finally, back to the 21st century. Lessons learned. Has Europe learned to defend itself, George?
Well, I call Europe a very savage continent, probably the most savage in the world. It defends itself, but only with extraordinary bloodletting. Something like 70 million people died in the First and Second World War. So has it come to the point where it's going to wage that kind of war? No, because on the other side of it, they have appeasement. And in this particular case, most of Europe, for whatever it says, what little it does, is sitting out this war. Involved in it is the United Kingdom, involved in it is Poland, some other countries, but this is primarily an American war once again.
Is Europe assuming that the U.S. will ride to the rescue again? Is that the subplot that we're seeing in all these gatherings of the leadership?
Well, this is Europe, so the first vision of it is, what plot, what troubles? No one needs to ride to come to ours. We can talk to the Russians and do it. That's one. The second is, of course, that the United States is going to hold and Ukraine is not going to fall to the Russians. Remember, if Russia takes all of the Ukrainians, the question is, what's the next thing it's going to do? It will have from Poland to Romania a line of forces readily able to cross it. For example, in Hungary, cross it all the way to Vienna almost and immediately. Russia will be back almost to the position it had in the Cold War with a blooded army. So we're fighting to keep them from getting to that point. The Russians are fighting to keep from getting the Americans too close to Moscow.
I always love it in early days of wars when somebody says it'll be over by Christmas. It's like a ceremony. It's like a poem. This will be a short war or a long war? What are we involved in?
Well, I think both sides are very cautious. The Russians know they're not going to win quickly. It's going to take several years for them to reach the point where they can control the country. And they're wondering, do they really have the resources? Do they really have the support in the country to do this? The Ukrainians are aware they can break very quickly, very unexpectedly, and find the Russians taking them on. So it's a question of how lucky do you feel this way, guys? And right now, it's hard to say.
The U.S., does it recognize the Atlantic as the buffer? Does the 21st century U.S. follow the 20th century U.S.?
Well, we're on one side of the Atlantic, and all the equipment we're sending to Poland or Ukraine is on the other side. Nothing gets through without the Atlantic. At the point, there is no power that can possibly threaten us in the Atlantic. That's not going to happen. But on the other hand, built into everything we do, everything we send, is going across the Atlantic. And we know that if anybody could touch it, we'd have to stop them.
We're 5 months into this war. It's early. Early intervention works. Is the U.S. prepared for that? And is it in train now that the U.S. will get involved actively on the continent of Europe?
I don't know that the United States is prepared to wage a war in Europe. I don't know that its training is ready for that kind of war. I don't know that it can be supplied. It will give it as much of weaponry as it possibly can, but it looks to the backup, if Ukraine falls, to Poland. Poland has become the chief power in Europe, not just because of the size of its military, which has become enormous, but it is prepared to go to war. So I think the United States is not going to go in, but it's certainly going to give Poland everything it needs to do so.
We have a headquarters unit, as I recall, in Poland now. Is that a predicate for a buildup in Poland following the fall of Ukraine?
Well, we also have the 82nd Airborne in Poland, and we have other troops. We have a large buildup in Poland. This is sort of the rear area of the Ukrainian war, and it's there to fight, but I'm not. The strategy the U.S. is following is that we will supply the Ukrainians, whose country is under attack, with whatever they need to defend themselves, but will not send in anything on the ground. And that can work. The question really is, how long does Russian morale last?
George Friedman is the founder and chairman of Geopolitical Futures, a subscription site I recommend. We're turning to the Pacific next. The Taiwan incident, lessons learned. I'm John Batchelor.